Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is USDA Chief Economist Seth Meyer, who joins us to discuss his projections at this year's Ag Outlook Forum. But first, here's this week's headlines. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack was on Capitol Hill Wednesday for a hearing with the House Ag Committee. The trip comes as Capitol Hill lawmakers sort through their approach to the upcoming farm bill, including just how to address issues like nutrition spending. For his part, Vilsack pointed to a letter he sent to state officials in charge of the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. That letter called on them to take immediate action to find ways to make the programs more efficient. Republicans on the panel also expressed concern about several Biden administration initiatives related to climate and a focus on small and medium-sized farms. Grocery prices rose by 0.4% in the latest consumer price index. Vegetable prices were up by nearly 2.5%, and egg prices rose by nearly 3.5%. Coffee, juice, and soft drink prices were also higher. On the other hand, meat, milk, and cereal and bakery product prices fell. The overall CPI rose by 0.3%, mainly due to higher prices for food and housing. And finally, USDA's most recent ag census shows there are fewer farms and older farmers. According to the new figures, the number of farms across the country fell by 7% between 2017 and 2022, and the average age of American farmers is now 58. All told, the U.S. has lost 535,000 farms since 1981. The amount of farmland fell by 2% over the last 5 years, which means farmland now accounts for just under 40% of acres in the country. To start our conversation with USDA Chief Economist Seth Meyer, we asked him, how do you feel about the health of the farm economy?
So I think we're in a good shape coming out of three pretty good years. And I'm talking generally speaking. I think we can find sectors of the economy where things, either particular commodities or geographies where things have been challenging. But I think we're in good shape. But I think the next year is going to be a bit more challenging as we see commodity prices fall and input prices remain pretty sticky.
Mm-hmm. So that in mind, I do want to talk quite a bit about your presentation that you gave at Ag Outlook Forum this week. But before we get into that, the recent Ag Census included some big drops in number of acres, number of farmers, and number of farms. What do you, just as a data analyst, as an economist, what do you make of some of those big declines that we're seeing here in American agriculture?
I think I'd refer back to some of the things that the secretary said. You know, I think we agreed on always worried about the relative health and dynamics of rural America. So, you know, I'd like to find ways for people to be able to stay on the farm or stay in rural communities. I think we also have to figure out ways to do that in a competitive way. I had a bunch of colleagues from Brazil sitting right in the front row as I talked about how competitive Brazil is becoming. So when I look at that, I say, hey, we got some challenges we need to face in terms of competitiveness while also maintaining the rural health of our communities.
Mm-hmm. Well, that in mind, what does the economics of that look like when we have fewer farmers, when we have fewer farms?
Yeah, I mean, you've simply got less people in the community, and that affects everybody from the local cafe to people providing other services, you know, and also the willingness of young people to want to stay in rural communities, right? So I think that maintaining the health involves, at a minimum, having more people there that can make a living.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Brazil, and that was one of the things that you also discussed in your presentation, was just having enough global export demand to account for the increased productivity in the United States, in Brazil. How much demand growth do you think is going to be needed as these countries ramp up their agricultural productivity?
Yeah, and it seems like an odd conversation to have, right, after coming off of 3 years of pretty high commodity prices. Point being is that we look to be coming into a period of softer commodity prices. And I think that, you know, we've had the luxury of, while Brazil and Paraguay and Argentina have been expanding in things like soybean production, that we've had China there to pick up that demand. That's slowing. I think we want to see both more domestic uses, more diversified uses of those commodities domestically. And at the same time, we're going to have to be competitive in the export market. You know, you got to look for some of the traditional kinds of demand that you've seen in the past and then diversify. You know, there are opportunities in the world, but we're going to have to compete for them.
How much of this is a need for market diversification versus a need for demand stability in a partner like China, who has gone through so much by way of ASF and other economic turmoil over the years?
So, China just overhangs this, right? They're so dominant when it comes to things like soybean imports, and they're important when it comes to corn imports. And we can describe those two markets as being very different. You know, the soybean market's a little more transparent than the corn market is. And so but generally speaking, it's hard to see inside of the Chinese market. So market diversification is probably a good thing in that regard, but you can't ignore them. They are a big player. So you got to figure out ways to increase demand for other uses. When it comes to something like soybeans, we got good opportunities domestically. We've seen crush grow, and that's a good opportunity.
We'll have more from USDA Chief Economist Seth Meyer right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together, but we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. USDA Chief Economist Seth Meyer may have presented at this week's Ag Outlook Forum, but he says the report and the data behind it have been in progress for quite some time.
We do this as alongside the regular WASDE work. So basically, you're doubling up and looking forward. And indeed, this month, it's purely economics. And it's not planting weather. It's not changes in the market dynamics that'll come along between now and planting. So that's one tough part. But when I look at it, and some of the things that jump out to me is, you know, I think back to historical situations similar where we have sharply falling commodity prices. And again, inputs that tend to fall more slowly, and that ends up being a couple of challenging years in terms of returns for producers.
Mm-hmm. There's this twin factor of moderating commodity prices, but also moderating inflation. I say all that to ask you, these changes that you're anticipating within production agriculture, what does that ultimately mean for the American and the global consumer?
When it comes to things like the price of corn, that only has a limited impact on food prices in the United States. We talked about that only, 15 cents on the dollar comes before the farm gate. The other 85 cents is after the farm gate. And so, you know, while we might see commodity prices fall, so grain, you know, wheat, corn, soybeans, there are other factors that are driving, say, domestic and foreign food price inflation. And so while I don't expect a fall or much of a fall when it comes to food prices, say in the United States, I do think we have seen slower growth. So maybe we've tempered increases at this point. But that inflation also goes into the producer's bottom line as well, too, because it isn't getting cheaper to fix your machinery.
Mm-hmm. What are the global factors you're going to be watching that could really shape whether or not these numbers you relayed ultimately come to fruition?
So one interesting one that we really didn't, you know, you only have so much time when it comes to the Ag Outlook Forum to mention all the things that you think are important. One of the ones that I couldn't squeeze in because I didn't really have an answer for it, and it was just more of a question, is we think about things like the global economy and maybe China's economy on its own. Again, getting back to the fact that there's such a big driver on imports, what does demand in China look like? And what does demand in the United States look like in terms of consumers' ability to continue to purchase, say, the meat, the beef, the pork that they like? So I think that that's probably one of the uncertainties that's hanging out there that you just don't have enough certainty, but it is, to me, one of the big question marks in the ag economy as we go forward the next year.
Mm-hmm. Want to wrap up giving you an opportunity to discuss what you feel is the significance of this year being the hitting the century mark for the Ag Outlook Forum, 100 years of this event. What do you think this ultimately means for American agriculture, the kind of stability that you have in this event, being able to have it for 100 straight years now?
Well, you know, so in my presentation, I talked about in the past, there was a chance that, you know, it wasn't a certainty that we would get to 100, that in the past, when we were at USDA too internally focused, that I think that really hindered the viability of these events. So I think that once we took the opportunity to broaden it, really listen to our stakeholders, have a discussion about what the folks in agriculture think is important, along with what we think is important, and hear all that diversity of voices. That's what's going to keep us going into the future and makes what the sessions are valued.
USDA Chief Economist Seth Meyer, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel, but first, our Hannah Pagel has a report on USDA's latest farm income figures in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
USDA's most recent farm income forecast is projecting things will decline for a second straight year. This chart shows net farm income and net cash farm income adjusted for inflation from 2003 to the forecasted totals for 2024. Net cash farm income is the green line. It's a measure of farmers' cash flow and includes cash receipts from farming, plus government payments, minus farm expenses. It's projected at just under $122 billion in 2024, a decrease of more than $42 billion from last year. Net farm income is the blue line. It's a broader measure of profits that includes depreciation and accounts for changes in farm inventories. It's forecast at just over $116 billion in 2024, which would represent a drop of more than $43 billion from last year. According to the report, the numbers can be attributed to drops in commodity returns and government payments, as well as higher production cost. We'll break down what parts of the country will see the biggest changes later in the show. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this farm bill coverage.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at agripulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Going to continue our discussion on agricultural economics and the upcoming planting season with a couple of folks keeping a very close eye on such things. Joined for that conversation by Krista Swanson with the National Corn Growers Association and Mac Marshall with the United Soybean Board. Appreciate both of you taking the time. And Krista, I want to go to you first, because we did see this week USDA Chief Economist Seth Meyer rolling out projections at the Ag Outlook Forum, and going to do a bit of a lightning round at the top of things here. And I'll start off with you. Your thoughts on the corn projections that we saw coming from USDA here this week?
Yeah, so the new outlook for 2024-25, in short, is for lower production, greater domestic use, increased exports, and higher ending stocks. And we can dig into any of those things more if you want. But one thing that really caught my eye was the change in market year average price projection. So the USDA lowered the expected market year average price for 2024 to $4.40. And one thing that I'm looking at is how that compares to the cost of production. If I look at the USDA cost of production forecasts, the latest of those, and then use this 181 bushel per acre yield that USDA has put out, that comes out to an average cost per bushel of $4.80. And so when we think about how that compares to a $4.40 price per bushel. That definitely puts margins in a really tight spot and underscores the need for an effective farm safety net.
Well, and Mac, continuing kind of the lightning round aspect of things here, your thoughts on what USDA is projecting for the upcoming growing season in the soybean complex?
Of course, last year we had acreage come in a lot lower than what we expected. So seeing a rebound, at least as part of the initial estimates, I don't think it's too surprising. USDA pegging 2024 area at 87.5 million acres. For beans, with that 52 bushel an acre yield, expected projection or production of 4.5 billion bushels, even with the rebound in crush or the expansion crush, the rebound in exports, that higher expected production, of course, adds to inventories, which have already been growing since last year. So all of that coming together to bring down the expected average marketing year price to $11.20, certainly a lot lower than what's been seen in recent years.
Mm-hmm. Crystal, let's drill down a bit on the demand picture. That was something you had mentioned in your response. And we see, of course, a shrinking cattle herd, such a key demand driver for American corn producers, but also at the same time, potential expansion in biofuel demand through things that are maybe a little bit further off, like sustainable aviation fuel, but some potential demand growth coming. What does, in your mind, the demand picture look like in kind of the near term for American corn producers, considering domestic demand, considering exports, all of those things on the table?
USDA is actually projecting feed use to be higher in 2023, so kind of jumping backwards to the current marketing year here, and a little bit higher again in the 24-25 marketing year, and I think that part of that is coming from the price competitiveness that we're going to see with this lower price level for corn. One of the good things that comes out of that is makes us competitive as a feed grain against wheat and some other of those feed grains. So we're still seeing that demand there from the feed side, and then also continued demand for ethanol as we look out over the longer term, that's certainly a concern as we see movement towards potentially a larger fleet of electric vehicles. But in the short term, at least for the next couple of years, that motor fuel use is still remaining at a pretty constant levels. And so ethanol use still persists. And, export demand, that's been a struggle over the last year or so, particularly as the dollar value, the strong dollar has hurt our competitiveness in the world market, but that's picked back up here more recently.
We'll have more from our panel right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together, but we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. Mac Marshall with the United Soybean Board says the industry has some big domestic demand drivers on the way.
Well, let's look at the runway here. So this year in calendar year 2024, I think we've got 5 new plants coming online across the country. So you see some of that reflected in the higher crush number of 2.4 billion bushels for this upcoming marketing year. As we get beyond that and some of the deferred announcements in 2025 and 2026, naturally, we're still waiting to see if those plants coming online in that timeline, if that comes to fruition. USDA cited crush expansion as one of the reasons why we have this area growth relative to last year, again, going from 83 and change million acres to 87.5 million expected planted acres in 2024. So the crush growth, and then, as Krista mentioned, some of the things happening on the animal ag side, we've also got growth in the poultry flock, On the hog side, that's of course our second biggest utilization channel domestically after after poultry as far as soybean meal use. But I'd be remiss if I didn't also point out those expectations for continued growth in soy meal exports. USDA, I think, cited this coming year as upside of 16.5 million short tons of soy meal exported, which should, you know, continue to grow upon last year's record figure and the pace of this year's soy meal exports as well.
Mm-hmm. Let's wrap things up talking about export markets. And of course, if you're going to talk export markets with somebody that works at NCGA, the word Mexico is probably going to have to come up, Krista. Obviously, that's a big issue right now in the trade and policy space. But if you put some numbers on it, what does the Mexican market mean to the American corn producer, and just how much work would have to be done, you know, absent that market?
Mexico is definitely an important export market for the United States, and particularly as we've seen, you know, China being able to import corn from Brazil, and we have lost some of the market share that normally would have went to China. That's really underscored the importance of Mexico as a trading partner. When we look at this year, they're still importing large amounts of yellow corn, and actually, again, with that kind of shifting in where our corn export flow is going, you know, they're actually making up almost half of our current corn exports in this year. We're still seeing some decline in their white corn exports. They aren't taking near as much white corn from the United States as they had been before. So we have lost a lot of that market share. Mm-hmm.
And Mac, wrapping up the conversation with you, you know, obviously we talk about export demand for American soybeans. We also got to talk about export demand for Brazilian soybeans and the competition that unplays on the global market there. What do you see that looking like here in kind of the near and long term, considering Brazilian production expansion and considering Brazilian weather that we're seeing right now?
It's a continuation of a long-term trend. Brazil's increased its soybean area under cultivation for, I think, 17 consecutive seasons. And, you know, there's no reason, I think, to see that, you know, reverse at any point in the near term. When it comes back to American agriculture, we have to think about a balanced portfolio of demand and markets for us to serve. And that's why, you know, seeing things like expansion of the renewable diesel sector, you know, potential for sustainable aviation fuel. You see, you know, the uptick in soybean oil use in biofuels. USDA raised that again to 14 billion pounds for this next year. Recall that was under 9 billion pounds just 3 or 4 years ago. So that's a really important, significant area of value-added growth for our nation's soybean farmers. But international channels, of course, still matter. But as you know, Brazil has really moved into being that low-cost, high-volume provider of whole soybeans, you know, increasingly to China, we have to continue to think about other markets.
I tell you what, folks, great to have this look at the upcoming, you know, just at the way the markets are with the planting season right around the corner for a lot of different commodities, including corn and soybeans. Krista and Mac, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers, but first, our Hannah Pegel shows you the geography of some of the changes in farm income.
Different parts of the country will feel stronger impacts of USDA's projected declines in farm income. This map shows the parts of the country dealing with the biggest expected loss in net cash farm income this year. Each of the 9 sectors on this map is a farm resource region, according to USDA's Economic Research Service. As you can see, each region is projected to see lower numbers. Producers in the center of the country are expected to be hit the hardest. The central section of the country, from the northern Great Plains to the U.S.-Mexico border, could see a decrease of up to 34% in farm profits. The Heartland region, which includes much of the Corn Belt and Northern Crescent, which includes New England and much of the Great Lakes region, are both projected to see losses of more than 30%. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Don't miss the must-attend policy event of the year. Register now for the 2024 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. Hear from the diverse players who are trying to revitalize rural revenues as we examine the forward-looking ideas that will drive policy decisions for this year and the decades ahead. The summit takes place on March 18th at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. and through our virtual experience. View the agenda and register today under the Events tab at AgriPulse.com.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. Both the House and Senate are scheduled for a President's Day recess as the threat of another possible government shutdown looms. And our Noah Wicks will be at the Family Farm Alliance's annual conference in Reno, Nevada, Wednesday through Friday. We'll continue to follow the latest in farm policy news at AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.